fighter planes, which have become the most expensive weapon system in the Pentagon's history. Another $2.4 billion will go to buy refueling tankers, and $904 million will pay for an additional 29 MQ-9A Reaper drones in 2016. The Pentagon proposes to buy 77 of the remotely piloted assassination weapons by 2020 at the cost of $4.8 billion. In terms of the $50.9 billion OCO War Fighting Fund, the lion's share, $42.5 billion, will go to cover continuing U.S. military operations in Afghanistan, while $5.3 billion is proposed for the new U.S. intervention in Iraq and Syria. Also proposed is $789 million for a NATO reassurance fund, which is to pay for the escalating series of provocative military operations on Russia's borders. Finally, Carter said that the Obama administration's proposed Pentagon budget includes $1 billion in 2016 and $8 billion by 2020 for a key component in the preparation for global war, ensuring the security and effectiveness of our nuclear deterrent, as well as the long-term health of the force that supports our nuclear triad. Massive Police Mobilization Against Anti-Austerity Protest in Frankfurt, Germany, by Christoph Trier and Alex Lantier. German police launched a massive crackdown on protests against austerity in Europe on Wednesday. Between 10,000 and 20,000 people in Frankfurt participated in a demonstration that coincided with the opening of the new headquarters of the European Central Bank, ECB. 60 buses from 39 European cities came to Frankfurt for the rally. A special train from Berlin brought almost 900 demonstrators. Police responded with a massive deployment of 8,000 officers, the largest mobilization in the history of the German security forces. They completely blocked off the new €1.3 billion, $1.4 billion, ECB building, ringed it with barbed wire, and transformed the entire city into a high-security area. Police ran identity checks throughout the city the night before the protest, and numerous buses carrying demonstrators were stopped and searched by police. Police fired tear gas, water cannons, and rubber bullets against groups of protesters at the central demonstration locations. Clashes broke out as protesters set police cars alight. According to organizers, at least 130 demonstrators were injured, while police reported that 15 officers were injured in scuffles or by stones thrown by protesters. Police carried out mass arrests, 350 people by noon, according to a police spokeswoman. On Uhlenstraße, police surrounded about 200 demonstrators, mostly Italians, and checked their papers. Police repeatedly attacked the surrounded demonstrators with pepper spray. At 2 p.m., the Frankfurt Fire Department reported that there were 47 fires. It was reported that there were attacks on fire trucks. Protesters held up signs that read, "European Monetary Fascism," or "Caviar for All," protesting the leading role of the ECB in imposing austerity in Europe, particularly in the indebted Eurozone countries of Southern Europe, such as Greece, Spain, and Italy. The ECB has cut credit to these countries' banks and governments, citing the global economic crisis and their high indebtedness, causing a credit crunch and forcing them to apply for bailouts. The bailouts have been made conditional on deep cuts in social programs that have reduced tens of millions of people to poverty. The organizations designing these cuts, the so-called Troika, consisting of the ECB, the European Union, EU, and the International Monetary Fund, IMF, are widely hated across Europe. Judith, a 30-year-old protester, said, "It's important to be here and show that the Troika's policies are not being done in our name. We can't always make cuts at poor people's expense and call them lazy Greeks, but we need to stand by in solidarity with them." The opening of the bank itself appears to have been a debacle, with ECB chief Mario Draghi speaking to only 19 invited guests. the Hessen State's economy minister, Tariq Al-Wazir, of the Green Party, and Frankfurt's Social Democratic Party mayor, Peter Feldman, spoke, while media representatives were largely excluded. "People are going through very hard times," Draghi noted blandly in his official remarks, saying that the ECB had become a focal point for public anger. "That may not be a fair charge. Our action has been aimed precisely at cushioning the shocks suffered by the economy," Draghi claimed. "We must listen very carefully to what all our citizens are saying," he added. Draghi's democratic posturing is a pack of lies. In fact, European officials have repeatedly stressed that they intend to continue ruthlessly imposing austerity in complete defiance of popular opposition. After the election of a government led by the pseudo-left Syriza party in Greece, which campaigned on the basis of promises to end EU austerity policies in that country, EU officials have said that they intend to continue with austerity demands in defiance of election results. German Foreign Minister Wolfgang Schäuble, one of the leaders in the European austerity drive, bluntly stated, "Elections change nothing. There can be no democratic choice against European treaties." The only way forward to fight the EU austerity diktat is to mobilize the working class internationally in a struggle for socialism. The bankruptcy of attempts to resolve the crisis on a capitalist basis has been exposed by the abject capitulation of Syriza to the EU's austerity demands. Shortly after its election victory in January, having campaigned on the basis of pledges to end austerity, Syriza declared its readiness to negotiate new social cuts in Greece with the ECB and the other European institutions. While the Frankfurt protest reflects broader opposition to austerity in Germany and throughout Europe, the perspective of the protest organizers themselves offers no way forward and is not, in fact, opposed to austerity. The demonstration was organized by the Blockupy Alliance, founded in 2012, which includes unions, pseudo-left groups such as the ATTAC anti-globalization movement and the German Left Party. It was also supported by Syriza in Greece and its Spanish ally, the Podemos Party. Podemos and the Left Party have both hailed Syriza's agreements with the EU to continue imposing austerity measures against the working class. On February 27, for the first time, the German Left Party voted in favor of an extension of the EU-led financial bailout for Greece, which is responsible for the social devastation of the country and will allow the ECB to continue imposing austerity measures. The deputy president of the Left Party fraction in Parliament, Sarah Wagenknecht, summed up the perspective of the organizers of the demonstration. "The ECB could put the whole of Europe on a sustainable course of growth and combat deflation without using up the savings of the middle class, producing new speculative bubbles, or fueling a global currency war," said Wagenknecht, who spoke at the demonstration. The Left Party and its allies across Europe, including Syriza, are seeking only to secure tactical shifts in the policy of the EU and Eurozone institutions, such as the ECB. As Syriza's sudden repudiation of its pledges to end austerity makes clear, this is a dead end for the working class. Also today on the World Socialist website, right-wing Israeli parties begin talks on coalition. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is expected to head his fourth coalition government committed to the expansion of illegal settlements on the West Bank. U.S. stocks surge as Fed signals slower rise in interest rates. Any tightening of the central bank cash spigot threatens to bring the bull market and the windfalls it provides the rich and the super-rich crashing down. Steel union sellout leaves oil workers at mercy of energy giants. The sellout deal signed by the United Steelworkers has opened the door for the companies to break up the national agreement and reverse the past gains of oil workers. Canadian oil workers laid off without warning. 1,000 oil construction workers were fired from their jobs at a remote site in Alberta last week. Missouri executes brain-damaged 74-year-old. Cecil Clayton was put to death despite overwhelming evidence of intellectual disability caused by a sawmill accident more than four decades ago. Federal court upholds Virginia's solitary confinement policy. A federal appeals court upheld the state's practice of automatically placing all death row inmates in solitary confinement until their execution. U.S. to train special police forces in Ukraine. Washington is helping Kyiv create tactical assault units akin to American SWAT teams. UK, Greater Manchester Devolution Agreement sets agenda for private sector bonanza. Private corporations are being primed to win up to £5 billion in contracts as Trafford Council prepares to sell contracts to run vital services. 4 years after Fukushima disaster, government to restart Japan's nuclear plants. The crippled Fukushima nuclear plant is still decades from being decommissioned and environmental problems continue to mount. Australia, bipartisan deal to fast-track mass surveillance metadata bill. Labour voted to rush the bill through Parliament on the basis of a token government proposal to obtain warrants before accessing journalists' data. And state frame-up of Maruti Suzuki India workers continues. Although the prosecution's case is manifestly in tatters, 150 Maruti Suzuki India workers continue to face the threat of conviction on false, politically motivated charges of murder and other grave crimes. All this and more can be found at wsws.org. For the World Socialist website, this has been Christine Schovelt.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The progressive group One Wisconsin Now has collected more data on Scott Walker than any other organization, and it has a warning to the people of New Hampshire and America about Wisconsin's union-busting governor. Behind Walker's rhetoric, the group says, is a trail of deceit, cronyism, corruption, and incompetence. One Wisconsin Now says Wisconsin under Walker has a sagging economy, mismanaged budgets, criminal investigations into Walker's campaigns, and payoffs to special interests. On top of all that, One Wisconsin Now says Walker's politically expedient flip-flops are pandering to the most extreme elements of the already extreme Tea Party wing of the GOP. Walker's trip to New Hampshire over the weekend was met by workers protesting Walker's anti-worker record and his comparison of pro-labor worker protesters to ISIS terrorists. The 59th annual meeting of the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women drew thousands of activists from around the world to New York City, including a delegation of more than 100 trade unionists from the U.S. As Radio Labor's Seymourine Ainsborough reports, though, unionists are protesting their treatment at that gathering.
Ain't no power like the power of the women.
And the power of the women don't stop.
Women unionists attending the 59th session of the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women in New York are protesting a weaker role they and the other groups have been given. More than 1,000 women have signed a statement of protest demanding more openness in the process. The Status of Women Commission meets every year to discuss the economic and social advancement of women. The meeting this year is especially important because it comes on the 20th anniversary of the Beijing Declaration. The declaration committed governments to take concrete action to strengthen the economic rights of women. This year, in a sharp break from the usual way the commission works, a new declaration was adopted on the opening day of meetings in New York without the input of civil society groups, including trade unions. The trade unionists at the meeting are most concerned about the change in how things are done, because the theme for next year's meeting is the economic empowerment of women, and they want their views heard. The meeting of the Status of Women Commission began on March 9th and will continue until March 20th. This is Seymourine Ainsborough reporting for Radio Labor.
Workers Independent News is proud to be heard on The Union Edge, Labor's talk radio. Live nationwide weekdays noon to 3 p.m. at theunionedge.com.
Brought to you by the IBEW, 750,000 men and women powering the way for an American comeback. Information on how to become an International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers power professional is online at IBEW.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What up, y'all? This is DJ Flip Flop from Cunning Linguist, and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM. Wow!
What's up?
From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
Many of the buildings, houses has been completely destroyed. More than 90% of the buildings have been destroyed. People are still haven't gone through yet. They still got weariness, have emotional feelings, but it will take time. It will take time before they can live up.
About half the population of the South Pacific island nation of Vanuatu has been left homeless after it was hit by Cyclone Pam, a Category 5 storm. Vanuatu's president directly linked the storm to climate change. We'll get an update from 350.org's Bill McKibben. He'll also talk about how a NASA scientist estimates California has about 1 year of water left, and how the United Nations body responsible for global climate change negotiations is backing the campaign to persuade investors to sell off their fossil fuel assets. Then, as WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange marks his 1,000th day seeking asylum in Ecuador's London embassy, Swedish prosecutors have agreed for the first time to come to London to question him.
We see this as a victory for Assange. We see this as an evidence that we were right all the time, that the prosecutor was wrong all the time, and we welcome her initiative, and we will cooperate fully to get this interrogation made as soon as possible.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. A bit late, but don't go away. We're hoping to have an interview with the Berkeley activist Cornerstone Carol Denny. Let's see if we can reach her and, well, hang on and we'll see where we're at.
Slice of Occupy, we really mean it. Have yourself
And that was Carol Denny from her album. Well, the album is called Unless, of Course, You Do. Hello, Carol Denny. Well, welcome to Free Radio. If you're, are you ready to be on? Because you're about to... Alrighty, hang in there. Excellent. Now, I think we got you on. Say something.
Okay, I'm talking.
Excellent.
Hello, Free Radio.
Hello, Carol Denny. So, Carol, I just played one of your songs, Have Yourself a Slice of Occupy, now a historical document, but still.
Very cool. Well, thank you for playing my song, yeah.
No, thank you for singing your song and distributing it. We ran into each other, I guess, a couple days ago at the a rally to, shall we say, stop the latest raft of anti-homeless laws at City Hall in Berkeley.
That's a good way to put it. Berkeley always comes up with a few more every two or three years. And, yeah, they had the votes for these anti-homeless measures. Yeah, but, I mean, today I'm actually feeling okay about it because there are some blessings in the moment. And one of them is these are... kind of funny and really poorly written, obviously targeting poor people who carry their belongings. So the blessing in that is that when you go to court and you say, you know, these are unfair, all they have to do is read them and they go, you know, most reasonable people would say, ooh, I see what you mean.
You know, I hope you're right. I'm going to, for the benefit of the listeners, I'm going to run through them. I have a list of them here.
Good.
It looks like these are recommendations to refer to the city manager, and I guess they also added a couple of commissions or task forces.
Who knows?
You know, for implementation regarding our commercial areas. But again, the word that I kept noticing was for implementations. In other words, they're not really looking for these ordinances to be examined, but rather simply implemented.
That's right. And thank you for catching that. It's different than anything else that happens in the city of Berkeley, which has approximately 45 commissions, citizen commissions, full of expertise on their purview subject. And what the Downtown Berkeley Association that worked with council members Linda Mayo and Jesse Araguin to write these intended to do was just sidestep all of that. They know what they want. They knew they had the votes. So why wait is the way they looked at it. And why indeed? So that as soon as the city manager polishes this up, they can and have the affirmation from the council to just implement them. So tell people what they are, yeah.
Okay, well, I've got a listing of, I guess it looks like 9, 10, 11, 11 measures. Some of them are ordinances, some of them aren't. The ordinance preventing panhandling within 10 feet of a parking pay station. In Berkeley, they have stations. You don't have parking meters. You have stands that you buy a little receipt from and put it on your car in order to demonstrate you've been paying their fee to park.
Exactly. So 10 feet on either side, which is a 20-foot perimeter right there, covering the entire sidewalk. So that's quite a big bite. And there's one of those, though, every 40 feet or so.
And that's how much of the city of Berkeley is covered by that? Just mostly what, Shattuck and Telegraph and maybe College, those three areas?
Yeah, it's sort of the downtown core. They put those things up there. So they say parking pay station, and it, what's interesting is they specifically don't say parking meter. So they intended to be specific to these big, giant, I mean, they look like robots. They're kind of ugly. The parking pay stations, and one of the things I intend to do this week is find out exactly how many of those there are and figure out the square footage. I haven't gotten there yet.
You are also, of course, the publisher and writer of the famous, infamous Pepper Spray Times.
Yes, I am. I'm also a cast member and the main songwriter for Twit Radio all on KPFA every Sunday night, in case you want to check out our comedy there. So, yeah, I like to write comedy, and the Berkeley City Council and the Downtown Berkeley Association are endless fonts of fodder, per se.
How long have you been doing Quickwit Radio? I know we have some fine archives from Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe, which
That's
I play occasionally.
I was also a writer for the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe on Free Radio Berkeley, and now Twitwit Radio, I guess, about 3 years. Yeah.
Are those shows archived?
They are archived on the KPFA website. And we're on from 6:30 to 7, if anybody can pick that up. And you can also just pick it up on the archive. It's pretty, buckle your seatbelts, it's pretty crazy radio.
Yeah, it's pretty good if your you know, Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe stuff is any indication.
Roger Comedy Troupe was great, but it was a lot more linear than this is. This is definitely hallucinogenic radio.
On KPFA, even within the FCC, fuck the FCC standards?
Indeed, it is. Indeed it is.
Well, and perhaps you become tamed in your aging situation.
Oh, no, this is very edgy. This is way edgier than the Pepper Spray Times or Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe.
Really?
And you'll see what I mean if you listen to it.
I will. I'll be listening to that.
I'm not the main writer. I'm not the main script writer. That is the bad boy of theater, George Coates, very famous guy. And I'm honored to work not just with him, but the whole cast. There's a cast of about 15 of us who do song parodies, singing, and we are various.
Well, I hope you're better than, what do we call it, the Capitol Steps. Gag me.
Capitol Steps. I'm not familiar.
They're a national group that puts out sort of very vanilla comedy to the tune of popular songs, you know, and that they're kind of, you know, they're catchy lyrics, and I buy their stuff because I'm hooked on that kind of stuff, but I'm glad.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, but I have to check Quick Wit Radio out at 6:30 to 7 on KPFA, which...
KPFA Sunday nights, yeah.
Probably streams as well, I imagine.
Yeah. We interview, interview famous people by impersonating them and forcing them to say ridiculous things.
Local famous people as well?
Local people as well. Janet Napolitano is one of our favorites. Hillary Clinton is on a lot. That kind of thing.
Oh, okay. You don't spare the Democrats and poor Obama?
Those are our favorite targets. And it's a little unfair. We know. We really ought to work over the Koch brothers. But you know how it is.
Everybody else is working them over. Why should you bother?
Right. So now back to the ordinances.
Yes, ma'am.
So that people out there who come to Berkeley know what to expect. Move on to number two.
Right. Number two is
my favorite.
Oh, yeah. Review ordinances other cities use to address public urination and defecation. They're going to look them over and return with recommendations for implementation. In other words, how can we arrest these weenie waggers outside for the boys? I don't know. And vulva showers. And return with recommendations for implementation. Ensure public restrooms are available. And let me ask you about the public restrooms in a minute.
Please do.
And well publicized. And also involve BART, one of my favorite groups. Maybe Oscar Grant's ghost. Could be channeled
another
here.
Very comic element is that they want BART to take care of it. BART, which of course locked its restrooms after 9/11 and never opened them again.
Whoa. Interesting stuff. Interesting.
You save a lot of money that way.
Yeah, it certainly does. And of course, it all goes back to pay for cheaper rates for writing on BART, right?
You're my kind of comedian, Robert.
Well, I think it's really important that these issues, when presented in a stern, solemn, or polemical way, do not get the same kind of, you know, play as when you do it with your Pepper Spray Times, and when you also do it, I'm assuming, on Quick Wit Radio, as you did on the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe, Carol Dean.
Yes, indeed, we do. And it is very tough to keep a straight face when trying to talk to the Berkeley City Council about urination and defecation.
Nobody whipped out their weenie and did any peeing at council, which might have been probably the most appropriate
action. But it was tempting because, irony of ironies, the bathroom was locked.
At City Hall. Well, you don't want the wrong kind of people taking a dump at your bathroom. Come on.
What's funny to me is that I can solve this, and I could solve this tonight if you would just enable me to pass a law. This is a lot of what I do just to entertain myself if I can't sleep at night. I say to myself, Carol, what law would you pass tonight? And the Berkeley City Council inspired a new one for my nice list. And it is that you pass a law that all the restaurants downtown, all the businesses downtown, be obligated to share their restroom facilities with the public. And I don't mean the paying public. I mean the public. And that means you better be on good terms with the public. You better not be harassing them and trying to pass repressive laws against them. You be on good terms because they will be using your bathroom. And once you did that, believe me, nobody, I mean, you got to be like off your nut on drugs to to want to urinate and defecate in public. Most people have a sense of privacy. Even the craziest people I have ever met use bathrooms. They know how to use bathrooms. But if you lock them, guess what's going to happen? To me, this is really obvious. So one of the things I plan to do on this, we're just at number two.
Yeah.
It's, no pun intended, is get a crew of people, you know, well-dressed people. I look pretty normal. And just go knock on the DBA's office door and ask to use the restroom and see if they'll let us use the restroom. Have a nice long line of people, film the whole thing, put it on YouTube. You know, because the restrooms are everywhere, especially if you opened up all of the empty storefronts in downtown Berkeley and used them as way stations and shelters. And certainly, they all have restrooms and they're all, most of them are nice, accessible spaces. You wouldn't have anybody hanging out in front. You'd have people helping each other and sitting around talking and playing the guitar inside. But, of course, you know, you create this problem when you lock everything up that way. So
yeah, but Carol, what would that do to the housing market? I mean, after all, people have invested money in real estate, and we don't want to forget, you know, their children, their grandchildren, their, you know, their need for that second or third pleasure cruiser that, you know, I don't know. I don't have a real sense, even in Santa Cruz, of the wealth distribution. Do you have a sense of how things
Berkeley
are looking in Berkeley?
Berkeley is number 8 on the top 10 cities of wealth disparity. Yeah, it is one among the worst in wealth disparity. Remember that little part of L.A. that was called Bell, where they discovered that the city council was making like $400,000 a year, and you know, it had a really poor. Berkeley is like that. When I saw that city publicized and I saw the pay scale differences, I thought, oh, Berkeley is just right in the pocket of that. And I knew that the Berkeley City Council and the city manager were trembling in their shoes that somebody would notice. So I, of course, publicize this as much as possible.
And clarify again, Bell is a city that's very poor, very wealthy, in the middle.
Very poor.
Okay.
But
yeah.
They had the highest pay for their city manager and their public officials, their city council, and tons of graft and corruption, too. So those people got so sloppy that they all lost their jobs.
Oh, well, yeah. You know, it's amazing what these do-gooders will do to get rid of established and authoritative individuals. Getting back to the recommendations.
We've checked out at the city council on St. Patrick's Day, number 3.
Well, St. Patrick's
Day. Go ahead.
It was St. Patrick's Day. Yeah, well, of course, we talked about 1, pan only within 10 feet. 2, let's talk about having some bathrooms, but let's really review ordinance to criminalize people who are urinating and defecating because they can't get to the bathrooms. 3, ordinance preventing placement of personal objects in planters, tree wells, or within 3 feet of a tree.
I can't wait to violate this law.
Well, you know, here in Santa Cruz, it's illegal to sit on the berms of the little cement barriers around the trees up and down a main street.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And it's also illegal to be within not 10 feet, but within 14 feet of a building, a kiosk, an intersection, a fence, a telephone, a bench, which leaves about...
Santa Cruz is such an inspiration.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when Berkeley in 1994 considered the stuff that became measures N and O, Santa Cruz passed them. And, you know, we went right ahead. You guys are just, you know, kind of chicken.
And, of course, as a consequence of passing those repressive laws, homelessness ended.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Oh, for sure. It's just that these people are pretending to be homeless. We know that they're really a bunch of drug dealers, meth users, and they're crazy people who've been, you know, unfortunately, we blame it all on the unloosing of the mental hospitals. They all need to be essentially locked up and helped, mind you. That's why we have things like Laura's Law to kind of assist them.
Whenever I heard that sentiment coming out of some of the Downtown Berkeley Association got some supporters to come, mostly real estate realtors who are trying to sell property and
some businesses
and who have out of town people going, ooh, how awful, you have people with tattoos and rings in their nose. And so every time I heard that, I thought, you know, I'm not that brave a person, but I'll tell you what, you know, I'm not scared of drunks and I'm not scared of people who are poor, and I'm not scared of people who might be between jobs. And I don't know, that's all over the world, frankly. It's not a Berkeley problem or a Santa Cruz problem. I'll tell you what scares me. Having a little merchants association who can snap its fingers and get the city council to do whatever it wants, no matter how unconstitutional. And Santa Cruz has it, too.
Big time. I mean, I've been talking online about not only the ordinances I just mentioned to you, which are many of them 21 years old, although they've been made worse over the years, but also we have a new series of ordinances. Well, the famous...
What? You mean Santa Cruz is coming up with new stuff?
Well, we're trying to be innovative down here, Carol. We don't want to be left behind by the Berkeley City Council.
Oh, I need to know.
Well, stay-away orders are the order of the day. You've probably heard of judges using stay-away orders, you know. But this, we feel that judges are a little too slow, a little too stodgy. Besides, it's too costly to have these homeless folks and their ilk coming into court. So now the authorization has been given to police and rangers to issue stay-away orders from one day up to 1 year for people who are violating an ordinance before they go to court.
So the police can issue this without any interference from the judicial system?
Correct. Although at the insistence of our ever-vigilant ACLU, they did include a provision that the city manager's representative will be happy to review any case and determine if the underlying ordinance, most of which are either being in a park after dark, smoking, or sleeping. Those are the three main ordinances we found they've used in parks in the last year and a half. If you look at all the tickets, we went through them painstakingly. They didn't have any records, so we had to actually do that by hand. Those are the main crimes. Also, we find, strangely enough, the main criminals are all people with homeless or transient or a social service center address. 115 Coral Street is our local lack of service center. So, yeah, then the first time they find you doing something as if against the law, as I saw the same kind of mantra repeated by a few of the business people, or one of them at least I'm thinking of, at your last city council meeting, which is everyone should be able to follow a set of standards. And I guess if you can carry around a toilet with you and a bed where you can sleep, then maybe you could do that in a more reasonable way. But, of course, the first time you violate any ordinance, a police officer has the discretion, without any kind of standard, to issue a one-day stay-away order. The second time, any time in the next year that you violate any kind of an ordinance, it has to be a week away from that particular first violation, he or she can hold you stay away for a week from not just the property he or she finds you on, but the place you were in before. The next time, it's a month. And this doesn't mean violating a particular ordinance. It means violating any ordinance. And it means violating any ordinance if the officer chooses to add on to it a stay-away order.
So how's your ACLU down there?
Well, they're very concerned about license plate, surveillance, and the Bearcat. I mean, they are just wild about those issues, particularly the Bearcat, which has gotten a lot of play, and I'm glad it has. You know, I don't like to see armored personnel vehicles, except possibly in children's playgrounds, you know, wandering about. But no, regarding this issue, they did issue some concern about it, but they declined to take any kind of legal action, even though some members of the board are lawyers.
I'm glad you told me about it. That's really shocking.
Oh, yeah, big time. Again, and that's why, in a certain way, these ordinances look kind of small potatoes to me, because I come from a city where they're big time, but they aren't small potatoes.
You make a very good point, and I want your listeners to know that your voice was one of the clearest at our city council meeting and had one of the best messages, which is Santa Cruz just keeps tightening up its repression and still has tons of poor people that they still find inconvenient. So we're not solving any problems here. We're just creating more hardship for the people who are most vulnerable.
And the police department itself, and this is one of the ironies, in order to justify, there's a rise of right-wing neighborhood organizations that are also involved in Santa Cruz, called Take Back Santa Cruz is one of them. Santa Cruz Neighbors is another. The Clean Team, which runs around looking for needles, is another. These groups went to city council in numbers and demanded, and the same kind of mantra that we heard two nights ago, something must be done. Of course, you know, and people are frustrated. You know, they, I think, the wrong kinds of reasons. They are afraid of probably a lot of other things that then get projected. And also, you know, people who are poor, some of them, do what they need to do, or what, or they do what they do do. You know, people do engage in, you know, theft. They engage in other kinds of drug use. Everybody, you know,
of course.
You know, you see this. Who cares?
So how much low cost and cheap housing has Santa Cruz built lately?
You know, they claim to be a big leader in various kinds of. Low cost isn't the right word. They call it affordable, and you know what that means. You know,
yeah,
you know,
I don't mean the quote affordable unquote housing. We got plenty of that up here too. The affordable in Alameda County is in the $100,000 range. I'm talking about cheap housing, low income housing, and Berkeley is terrible at that.
Well,
so they've created the homelessness. As a matter of fact, it's the people who are on the board of directors of the Downtown Berkeley Association who are the largest property owners who have taken all the SRO. We have approximately as many people on the street now as used to live in the SRO housing, the single-room occupancy housing, that was the cheap housing where you didn't have to have first month, last month. You could just rent either a room for the night or the week or the month, be gone for a while, go to a festival somewhere and come back and just get a different room. We had plenty of that housing, and we really did not have the kind of people, the population trying to live on the streets only 30 years ago, 20 years ago that we have today. And that's why.
You know,
they turned
remember
all that into condos.
I mean, I remember I lived in the Cal Hotel. I lived in the cheap hotels along University and, you know, the Berkeley Inn, which was not terribly cheap, but certainly cheaper than stuff that is now.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it was doable.
The Carlton Hotel, all these different places. But quickly, and I'm going to kind of run through the rest of these ordinances.
Okay, go for it. I'll stop interrupting.
No, you're not interrupting. You're doing fine. You know, you're elaborating, which is good. Lying on planter walls or inside of planters. This is the big one. deploying, bedding, tenting, sleeping pads, mattresses, blankets on sidewalks and plazas from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. I'm going to come back to that one.
Uh-huh.
Affixing personal items to public fixtures. These are all going to be apparently criminalized once laws come back and get enacted.
I can't wait to violate that one, too.
Yeah, including poles, bike rakes, planters, trees, bike racks, tree guards, newspaper racks, parking meters, and pay stations. But pet leashes will be exempt. Unpermitted cooking on public sidewalks, which I was told at least by one of your activists.
No pancakes! The no pancake law.
No pancakes, yeah. No pancakes in public. And then they're going to survey the business districts to determine the adequacy of enforcement of current ordinances. And that was a point made by other activists who said, myself included, that said, look, and this is always the argument used by civil rights advocates against these ordinances when they appear in different cities. You already have ordinances that exist that can be used to deal with these issues. Now, I don't know. In all honesty, I don't know if this is always true. If you want to get rid of the reality of poor poverty being visible on the streets, no, they aren't enough.
There are. In Berkeley, there are anyway. I can speak with authority about this because I looked them all up after this thing passed. There's a 15-foot, like, you can't have, believe me, I have done what I consider to be a definitive study of Berkeley's can you put stuff on the sidewalk laws, and I know them backwards and forwards, and all this stuff is covered.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but I'm even referring to what predates those ordinances. When those ordinances were being put forward, and earlier civil rights activists were worried that these were designed to go after poor people, that they weren't going to be enforced against merchant signs. In Santa Cruz, for example, merchant signs are banned. You're not allowed to have freestanding merchant signs, but merchant signs are there all over the place, and there's never been anybody who's taken
them. That is exactly how I got rid of a set of laws in, let's see, I think it was 19. Yeah, the earliest iteration of Measures N and O was a sudden use of a 1952 law in Berkeley called 3262 NS 12.1. And people came up to me and showed me their tickets, and when I noticed what it was, I knew. I went and looked it up, and it was a law designed for merchants who capitalize on being right next to the sidewalk by putting their merchandise out there, potted plants out there, signs out there, and clutter up the sidewalk, make it difficult to pass. So they started using that solely against people, and all I had to do to get it bounced out of town. And it was Linda Mayo who sent me a thank you note about documenting all of the merchant violations.
Linda Mayo, the same councilwoman who pushed these laws, the new ones.
These laws, sent me a little personal note thinking, this is really important investigative journalism. We want to thank you because we don't want our police to discriminate in this way, because that's what they were doing. They were treating people like potted plants. And the law makes, so the law subsequent to that, it was actually a chief of police, my favorite chief of police in the city of Berkeley, Meisner, sent a memo that we famously use, telling his own police force to cut it out, quit treating people as though they were potted plants, and tried to differentiate between the issue of actual things blocking the sidewalk and people who are, well, temporary, even in the long run, but certainly people need to, that's who the sidewalks are for. So we love that memo. You know, the prejudice in the police force at that time was so thorough that he issued the memo of his own accord, not because us activists were yapping about it. But yeah, you make a very good point. And documenting the violations by merchants is something I also started to do the morning after the meeting on Tuesday, was just take pictures of who's, and I'm going to do an article called Who's Really Blocking the Sidewalk, because there's some like roaring sidewalk blockage going on in this town, and it's not by people who are on the streets and vulnerable and poor. It's by merchants who just kind of feel like it. They'll drag tables out there and make an instant sidewalk cafe, which is, you know, doesn't really bother me, but it bothers me a lot if they're getting a free pass on a law that then they're using against me. Now, I'm one of the people who took out a chair, which is perfectly legal to do, put it on the sidewalk against the wall, not blocking anybody, more than a six-foot passage in front of me, just sat there playing the fiddle. 2 days before they tried to pass an anti-sitting law, because it would have become illegal. And they gave me a ticket anyway.
But dismissed in court?
Only because the East Bay Community Law Center got involved. They were going to take me all the way. What happens to me these days, because I'm so well known by the police department, is they'll just find someone or some cop who will turn it into an assault charge. And so I've been accused of assault so many times, and I'm like this gray-haired old lady. It's really kind of funny. So the district attorney reads, like, she assaulted this person. She committed assault, like, with a fiddle in her hand or something. And then that's all they see down at the district attorney's office. So I usually go through about 2 or 3 years of pretrial before finally I'm sitting there saying, nope, I'm ready for trial. Take me to trial. And now, then they'll dismiss it on the day of trial. Now, that cost, the cost there, try to imagine, that's a lot of cost, a lot of community cost.
Oh, yeah, no, big time. I mean, we should know, we're talking with Carol Denny here, and you're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. If you want to call in and have a question for Carol or a comment, you can, I'm hoping, on the other line, 427-3772. Carol has also been active decades ago in trying to fight to maintain user development of the famous People's Park area created back in 1969 by the community, and still being kind of held together by the community in spite of, you know, depredations by the city and mostly by the university. And we've exchanged a little bit on the email on this, Carol, and I can't get I've heard Bob Esther. Bob of the Coalition on Homelessness, whose last name I can never get right.
Offer Westort,
thank you.
Was a terrific organizer for our successful fight against a ballot measure that would have criminalized sitting.
He and others who I've written in the last couple of days have not confirmed what seemed to be not just the rumor, but the statements made at the Berkeley City Council by several speakers, both before the speaking at the council and outside when there was some eloquent poetry read. And I think one woman actually sang a song, which stated that the People's Park is once the students go away on spring break, which is supposed to be coming up, even this weekend, there's going to be clear cutting of the trees there and other kinds of so-called improvements that are actually designed.
The People's Park stage.
And the elimination of the stage there, which is used by Food Not Bombs and other groups. What's the truth about the situation as far as you know, Carol? I know that when you wrote, you had no new information.
I have no new information.
And we have no new information yet.
So
okay.
what we try to do at this point is, of course, call the various people who might be willing to tell us, but mostly they capitalize on moments like this when the students are either in finals or out of town to try to move on the park. So what we'll just do is go up there, have big picnics, and try to be ready. So if there are people in Santa Cruz who want to spend the weekend up here in Berkeley, we'd appreciate it. You know, come have a picnic in People's Park, be at the ready, at least to witness if there is an action on the park.
Well, I know that's when I first met you, I believe, was when the original attempt to put in a volleyball court happened. And
The days of volleyball.
Yes, the famous volleyball court. And that was, that was opposed by nonviolent activists, by activists who were a bit more direct action. Sawed down the poles. And you and three other activists became the subject of a strategic lawsuit against public participation in that area, and fought it for years. I'm like, what was the ultimate outcome of that lawsuit?
The ultimate outcome is that a judge gave the university a permanent injunction against the four of us. Bob Sparks has passed away, and David Nadell was murdered, so there are just two of us left, Mike Lee and myself. So we're permanently enjoined from doing a whole lot of things in the park, like gardening, which is just kind of ridiculous. And I have violated that injunction all manner of times. I just pay no attention to it. The whole point of a slap suit, as you know well, but your listeners may not know, is just to tie you up in court and wear you out and cost you money and hopefully discourage you. And I don't know, me and Mike Lee aren't discouraged, and those of us who love the park will be there. And what we do is just get together as a community and do our best to convey the history, which is the most important part. The open space is lovely, the stage is wonderful, the music is great, and we try to convey the history. The history of what the park represents is why it is a historic a city landmark. And historically cherished by people all around the world. People come from all over the world just to see People's Park.
For those who don't know, People's Park is a one large block area that is about four blocks from the university along Telegraph Avenue. And it's, I guess the police and the university have made it so that it's illegal to be in the park at night, just as in Santa Cruz, it's illegal to be in any park area at night.
Yeah, they have all kinds of rules, but the park is pretty much self-governed, and I think that's why they always hate it. And, you know, there's not a lot you can do about people who are disobedient unless you really want to try to put them all in jail. And I have to say the upside of our legal system right now is the jails are too full and the courts are backed up, and, you know, they know better than to do what they could do in the 60s, which is just shovel everybody into holding pens and shuffle them all off to jail. There's really no room. So the park has the advantage of, or disadvantage, depending on the day you're up there, of pretty much reflecting the population that's there. And, of course, it has had to serve, and it's weary of this. All parks and public spaces are weary of being the default zone for everybody they've evicted and fired in the last several decades. But people have to be somewhere, and you can't be on somebody's private property, so there you have it. Santa Cruz and Berkeley, liberal towns with their heads right up their rear ends about the inevitable result of gentrification.
You know, that point, of course, was made eloquently by people who are suffering the toe end of the boot, homeless people themselves, by university students, by researchers who published this most recent report that is now being used by the Right to Rest movement looking for...
Oh, the report is so good. Tell your readers that it's online and that it is a great rip and read. I mean, it's so beautifully written, and there's even, like, shocking suspense in it. It's fabulous. It's the best report you'll ever read.
You have a reference for where it is. I can do that, but I don't have it handy right now.
I'll send it to you after the show.
Yeah, I can probably find it, too. This is a report, if you're interested. You can look up, I guess it's not the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty. It's a Berkeley advocacy group. Look up Right to Rest, and it should be on their website.
Right,
RAP,
yeah.
RAP, Western Regional Advocacy Project.
Yeah, and that other report is a rip and read, too, the National Law Center on Homelessness.
You know, but what I noticed, Carol, I notice every time I come up to Berkeley in these protests, and I don't think I was up in Berkeley at a protest since, I went to Oakland during the Occupy movement, but since Ken Meshesh was dragged into court on 647E, which is now being used again, I guess, against Mark, the hate man, as he's affectionately called. And at that time, I noticed as well, Berkeley, although we had more activists back then, it seems to have a core of people who come together, whatever their personal disagreements or history, to fight these ordinances when they show their face or when these abuses become evident, even if there's no new ordinances being proposed. And social service providers, to some extent, I saw Boone Achima there.
Yeah.
I haven't always been a fan of Boone Achima's, I've had critical things to say about her. I'm pretty critical about different people at different times and particular situations. But, we were all, I guess it's a matter of a common threat. But the issue in Santa Cruz is you can't get a social service provider to speak out against an anti-homeless law.
We have that same dynamic, though, in Berkeley, where it becomes very difficult because they're the ones who fund you.
Right.
So I am sympathetic with that, but I also think that you've got to speak up anyway, and many of them do in Berkeley. I'm sorry if people in Santa Cruz are not doing that, because the more of them that speak together, the more safe they are from being defunded for their politics alone.
The other thing I noticed, to give people a sense of what happened, these whole raft of ordinances, which I read most of them, and there are a few others that I didn't mention, were presented kind of out of the blue, as you said, without going through commissions. Here in Santa Cruz, we don't get to put things through commissions. They just appear magically at the city council. Not
Sounds
always.
Sounds like you need some commissions.
We have a few, but they've been defunded, and they hold meetings less, and they've been stacked with conservative appointees and things of that sort. But there aren't many. I mean, we certainly haven't got 40-odd commissions. I mean, I know Berkeley is a significantly bigger town. I think you're half again as big as we are. What are you, 90,000 or something? I don't know. We're, 60,000. We have maybe 10 commissions. And you have, you have a human rights commission. You have a homeless commission. We don't have those things. We used to have a couple that were like that. But in any case, I don't want to lose my train of thought here. The commissions that you have, of course, are great. Here, I'm going to take a step back here and take a deep breath. I want to, again, let me give myself an opportunity to pause while I again remind people, do try to call in if you have a question to ask of Carol. This is Carol Denny I'm talking with. She's a singer, a writer, and an activist in Berkeley. And, have you been down to Santa Cruz at all? I know that there used to be a time when Berkeley activists and San Francisco activists and Santa Cruz activists would all come to each other's cities to support things.
Oh, good heavens. I did come to Santa Cruz it was one of the sleeping bands, or I think I've been a couple times down there just to support when a repressive ordinance came, to try to oppose a repressive ordinance being supported by the city council majority. Yeah. But it's much harder for me because I'm on the radio show every Sunday night.
Yeah, I do a radio twice a week, so I've even got to slip in more. Mm-hmm. And you, of course, you do a lot of prep for your show, I imagine. But
yeah, as the songwriter, I have to work with the writer, and then I work all week, so
Well, I know that the one thing that there was something kind of but bothered me, but again, this may be a difference of opinion between the two of us. I know that the one of the original sponsors of this raft of anti-homeless laws, spiced with a few, oh, let's sing to find a few bathrooms if we can, and let's try to do a few other things. He was finally, you know, people got pissed with him, activists in Berkeley, and said, what is this crap? And he finally withdrew his name from the ordinances that were proposed on Tuesday night in Berkeley, and instead he sponsored an alternate series of ordinances, or not ordinances, series of measures that, and here was the thing, I heard them described, I briefly saw the description, this is Jesse, what's his last name?
Jesse Arreguin, District 4 Representative.
And I've become increasingly skeptical over the years of these, you know, I didn't want to call them baby steps, because I regard them as a form of distraction almost.
Oh, thank you. I agree. I have absolutely no disagreement with what you just said. I think it's all phony. And with all due respect to soup kitchens, I'm happy there's soup kitchens. I'm happy there are, I don't know, charities and people doing things they think are like a nice, helpful thing to do to help people on the street. But the main thing we need is housing. And what I love is that guy, Jesse Arreguin, the council representative for District 4, he made a speech at the ribbon cutting of the penthouse condo building right next to the downtown BART station. And he said, and I'm going to quote really badly here, but the paraphrase would be, you know, this will enable us to draw, you know, wealthy young tech workers into our town and have them participate in the lively downtown. Now, that's newspeak for, you know, well, you know, we don't want to build any SRO housing and just have poor people here. We want wealthy people who can buy season tickets at the Berkeley Rep and pay the insane prices at La Note. You know, that's what he said. There wasn't a word said about the embarrassment of taking scarce square footage in one of the densest cities nationwide and dedicating it to rich people. Rich people can take care of themselves. We need really cheap, low-income housing, which we used to have that. If they would hold developers' feet to the fire, and Jesse Arreguin obviously is not going to do it, hold their feet to the fire and force them to build housing that addresses community needs. That's the way I put it. Are you building housing that addresses community needs? Because the number one need is cheap housing. Not just for single people, but for families.
You know, Carol, I go further here in Santa Cruz, although I don't do it. I don't do the actual, you know, direct actions that might actually implement this and undergo the risks that that would entail. But I talked, for example, to a guy called Scott Galloway, who's a regular sort of church provider at the... at a meal I go to, you know, get interviews from homeless folks, which I'll be playing after we finish speaking on the air. And, you know, he's big into these things like smart solutions and what we call the 180-180 program, which is a way essentially of shifting around Section 8 vouchers that already exist, and then facilitating a few people to get into places by talking landlords into letting them in, you know, with these outrageous rents they can get some community prestige by letting a few poor people here and there. But, you know, I note, and was said throughout the Occupy movement, there are vacant buildings all the hell over the place.
There you go.
And we don't need to build new housing.
That's
it's
right.
There to be taken. And it obviously needs to be taken. Of course, you know, I know that's, you know, violates the private property sanctity.
Oh, no, there's another way. And I mentioned it at the city council meeting.
Go ahead.
And we have it in our, it's one of the elements in our general plan. So you might want to check your general plan. You might have it as well. And it's called a vacancy fee. Here's how it would work, and I'm just going to kind of paraphrase badly again. So you got, you know, 18 vacant storefronts up and down your main street, and you're sick to death of that. You pass a law. This is my favorite thing. Pass a law tonight. Just give me the power, hypothetically. And what it is you got to rent those spaces out in the next, let's be generous, let's give them 60 days. or else we're taking them over by eminent domain. We have an emergency, and you're allowed to do that. That's what eminent domain is for. And so those places have electricity. They have bathrooms. We can move in cots. We can put up partitions and just have people section it off. You can have a communal space. Usually there's a little kitchen somewhere, and just use them until they rent them out. So you could do that. The city council has the power to do that. That's not a taking. That's something they have the power to do because it's in our general plan. So check your general plan. But do they have the will to do that? That's why I went up to the council and mentioned it, because a vacancy fee is something that already exists in other towns. I think Washington, D.C. has one. There's at least three cities I looked up that have vacancy fees. And the idea is, hey, you know, we'll either use it or you're going to pay us a lot of money, and then we take that money and we build low-income housing. We build the things we need. We replenish our general fund. Now, this is just common sense. Otherwise, you have what we have in downtown Berkeley is probably sounds a lot like what you have. We have large property owners who prefer to leave their property empty if they can't rent it at the same rate that they rented before the 2008 debacle on Wall Street, because they can write that off their taxes. It makes more, it pays them more to leave it empty if they can't rent it for more money than they used to rent it or lease it. It pays them to leave it empty. And so until that system changes, the city of Berkeley has its own municipal power that could intervene and interfere with that. Those are the people who fill up their campaign coffers, so they don't want to offend them.
I take it there's never been a real movement on city council to do that. I mean, Chris Worthington is not championing your idea, or is he?
You know, even Jesse Ottergeen admitted that it was a good idea, it was a reasonable idea, but they haven't moved on it. And, you know, my feeling is all politicians, and I mean 100% of them, I think Santa Cruz politicians and city council representatives are a lot like Berkeley's. They only really get pressure at, like, way too late moments, like right before the city council has already made up their mind about some new anti-poor laws. The main people they see and schmooze with are developers who are so wealthy and give them money and give them special deals, like Donna Spring used to get. She represented the downtown for a long time. She wanted a public bench removed because there were homeless people sitting on it, and they just did that for her. Grether, one of the developers downtown, didn't like his street trees, so he hired a bulldozer, and he took them out. These people never get thrown in jail. It just doesn't work that way. They get whatever they want, whenever they want it. And most people don't even realize it's happening. They see a bulldozer and they think, oh, well, they must know what they're doing. But, you know, I've been working with people who have a journalistic instinct and investigative instinct, and what we try to do is out them and make sure that the public knows about the corruption. Linda Mayo got a sweet deal from developer Patrick Kennedy, and her store is in his building still. That's the first store I'm going to boycott, oh boy, is the ceramic store on University Avenue that she owns.
Yeah.
There's going to be a boycott come out of this, and one of the first things that happened today, and I don't know how it happened, I had nothing to do with it, but the YMCA lockers in the women's weight room all encourage people to call Fran Galati, the director of the YMCA, and ask why. He had a representative arguing for anti-poor laws. That's a non-profit. They're not allowed to argue for legislation, and yet there was someone doing so publicly at the Berkeley City Council meeting. So those flyers are inside every locker in the women's weight room.
Did you do that, Carol? Did you sneak those flyers?
I don't know who it was. It was some gray-haired old lady. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. You know. Well, I'm gonna roll this up at 7, and I'm gonna remind people to check in on your show tonight.
Such a pleasure. Oh, my show isn't tonight.
No, it's Sunday night. That's right.
Yeah.
I do a show on Sunday. So
thank you so much again for coming and speaking at our city council meeting. And please let us know. We'll try to get to your city council meetings, and we need to build a nationwide network so that we can pass the right to rest law that's now at the state level and make sure that we help each other out when we can.
Well, you know, the best thing about the protests that happened on Tuesday that I liked was it seemed like it was going to go somewhere else. I mean, it was going to go beyond. Here at City Council, we have people showing up. The most massive numbers have shown up for this Bearcat protest against this armored vehicle that the police have already acquired behind the backs of the community. And just sort of, you know, with some false information about deadlines, as far as I can see, or at least information that's not documented. We got to do this right now or we'll lose the money. And that doesn't seem to be true based upon the underlying documents.
That's often the mechanism, though. The grant is available for a limited time, and then everybody goes into a little scurry, and then suddenly you have a big tank sitting in the middle of your city hall.
But Berkeley turned it back. I guess it's something I should also ask you a little bit about before
I go. Berkeley was saying yes until Copwatch publicized the fact that we were about to acquire an anti-personnel vehicle.
And Copwatch, of course, is a group of activists who've been around for 25 more years or longer.
They've done some stunning work, and that's one thing they did.
They watch cops on the street,
really,
right?
Proud of.
They're
all
out
they
there.
Had to do was make it public. Yeah,
they're out there. I mean, that kind of information is vital too. But they're also hands-on, feet on the street as well.
Yes, they do.
Keeping,
they try to witness for people who are being harassed by cops. Yeah.
And there recently, after massive marches in support of Black Lives Matter, and here in Santa Cruz we called it also Homeless People's Lives Matter, and we were attacking racial profiling here. We can't get the Bearcat folks too interested in local class and racial profiling. We can't get them interested in changing policies of the police department locally. But they're all set to say, you know, Ferguson is very bad, you know, end racial profiling. But they don't want to get specific and local about it. But you, your group's down up there. I mean, you blocked the freeways. You got for the first time I heard in quite a while, the police began beating up people in mass or in significant numbers during those December protests. Is that accurate?
Yes, they did, and they got chastened by our city council, who removed by moratorium a 1-year moratorium on their use of CS gas, their use of overhead baton strikes. There was a whole series of police reforms that they are expected to institute. So what's interesting is that there hasn't been any movement on police review or police accountability in years, and I mean way over 10 years. And suddenly all that happened because the police were so wildly out of control in December. But you can see how much part of the strength of that was that it had been a Black Lives Matter focus. And what I'm pointing out in at least one of the articles I'm writing about what just happened at our Berkeley City Council meeting is because the brunt of discriminatory laws disproportionately affects people of color. I think it's safe for me to assume that Black Lives Matter in the city of Berkeley for, let's see, about a month, and then it's over. Because they were full of sentiment about how Black Lives Matter, you know, back a month ago when they passed these reforms, these police reforms. But there wasn't any discussion of race left in the building that to remind them who was going to be targeted by these anti-poor laws, because there really is a huge disparity if you look at the numbers. And these reports that I think are so wonderful are full of statistical information about that. If you ever need to convince your city council representative, sit and read this aloud to them. You know, I want to have a read-in of the No Safe Place report in the, you know, downtown. I think that would be a magnificent thing to do. Just like everybody take a page.
Yeah, the Wobblies have returned.
Yeah.
That's the IWW that used to do its free speech fights about 110 years ago. And were successful in some cases, although beaten out of town in others. They would come and read the Constitution on the corner in order to allow working people to organize and fight the corporate scenes that were, you know, paying people subservient
wages. I also want to have some street theater. I really want to have I want to play the role of John Koehner and show people how to properly deploy a blanket.
That is one of the ordinance recommendations that they're going to come back with an actual law for, I presume, in the next month or so.
Yeah, we'll keep in touch and let you know how it shapes up. The poor city manager now has the job of trying to make this look less targeted and less unconstitutional, and I wish her luck.
Keep in touch and let us know what's happening with People's
Thank
Park.
Thank you so much for calling. Thank you for your show and, again, for testifying before our city council.
Sure.
Good luck down there.
Yeah, let us know if there's something immediate that's coming up around People's Park this weekend, and I'll try to pass on the word.
I will call you immediately if that happens,
We've been talking with Carol Denny, whose website is...
It's www.caroldenney.com.
Thank you, Carol.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we're still here at Free Radio. That was Carol Denny from Berkeley. And the call-in number here is 427-3772, in case anyone was listening. And now's your chance to call in and talk about local stuff or your reaction to what went on in Berkeley. I'm going to be playing a little bit of her music from her newest album, Unless, of Course, You Die, and other songs by Carol Denny. Let's take it from there, and I'll be right back. Courtrooms Are a Rich Man's Game. Again, another one from Carol Denny's, I think it's her latest album. It's called Unless, of Course, You Die.
So I got a kind of a... There was a freaky rumor that we were about... Free Radio Santa Cruz is about to be forced out. Its transmitter was going to have to shut down because we have no place to go at the moment. Once we lose our current site, which we are likely to lose soon, but again, it was... I thought it was going to be immediate in the next couple of weeks. Apparently, that's not the case, but we are on a pretty short leash. It could happen at any point, and though I do keep saying this, yet at the same time, for the last 6 months or more, we've been broadcasting. I'm not quite sure when the time was we finally got back on the air again after 6 months of not broadcasting. We need a place to go. So, again, I encourage you to call my number, 423-4833. If you have any ideas, if you'd like to do a little surveying for us, go out and look around. If you have friends who have places where they have a tree that's tall enough, second story tall, or a room on the, in an upper story where we could put the transmitter, not even a room, we just need a box, a place to, it doesn't really require a lot of space. A power source is what we need too. We need to run a power line to a house, I believe. But if you have any ideas or suggestions at all, please call me at 423-4833, 423-HUFF, for those of you who aren't numerically minded. HUFF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and it, the number 423-HUFF is also my number, 423-4833. You can give me a call. The number here, however, if you want to call the studio, is 427-3772, and you can... weigh in, and you can also let me know that you actually have maybe picked up something from the last hour's worth of chatter, or perhaps not. Maybe you think we need more direct activity down here. There is a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday. I did get a letter from our mayor, Don Lane. I had sent him a letter that said something to the effect of, I've heard that Hillary Clinton has been concealing her emails, public emails on public policies, and to and from the public on a private email account and not making them available to those who want to find out what has been said under the Public Records Law or the Freedom of Information Act. I think that's the federal version of our state Public Records Act law. Santa Cruz City Council members, I think, have the same responsibility. Not quite sure what their legal obligations are on this matter, but I know what their legal obligations should be, as far as I'm concerned. And I wrote Lane to ask him to tell me specifically whether council members are concealing their public emails in private sites, and if so, could they please make those available to researchers who want to know what's happened, for example, to all the bikes that the Santa Cruz Police Department stole from the bike church and the other nonprofits that the bike church serves, what the contracts are with other cities in terms of what the police department isn't telling us, who they have services and strings attached deals with that maybe didn't go directly through the city council or did under other names. I asked, anyway, I wanted to see the, to get a statement of policy, how each council member was treating emails coming in, whether they were receiving them in private accounts, and whether they were saving those accounts so they could be accessed by the public. Don Lane responded that he would do that with for his account, but that he would not request other council members do it. He suggested he had no time to do anything of that kind, even though he is the mayor of the city, and that I could do it myself. I could, you know, talk to each one of them. Well, you know, I sent them an email. It's not that hard to send a... I sent the same email to them, and the only one who's responded so far is Micah Posner in terms of a... I will make my emails accessible. I am not entirely. I should review what he actually said. Let's see. It's around here. Let me take a look. See what Don Lane said was. Other members of the city council, he writes, are accountable directly to the community and are not accountable to me. It is not my job to make them fulfill their requests. He suggested I should take on the difficult tasks and wish me and find out what exactly is the situation with the other council members. I wrote him back something to the effect of, look, you're the mayor. And the city manager or the city, and the city administrator, who are the real powers in the city, in spite of your relative powerlessness next to those highly paid and in it for life officials, they still are more likely to listen to you than they are to me. So can you please find out this information? Or I'm sorry that you're not interested in finding out this information. He also sent me his long statement about the Bearcat. I can never remember the name of that thing, but it's an attack vehicle, as it's described. And what we have been told by the SCRAM organization, the group that banned Huff from their literature, without having Huff come to the meetings or without informing them they were doing it, and in doing that in a closed meeting, which not even mentioning this was on the agenda to those who might be defenders of Huff, not that we should need any defending, we're just fine as we are. But SCRAM seemed to be getting a promise from the mayor, which he now denies he made, that this whole issue would be the Civic Auditorium, the much larger building across the street from the City Council chambers, would be available for an evening session, not just an afternoon session, to enable people with jobs to come and who have, responsibilities during the day. And Lane has decided against that. Or maybe he's afraid the council will veto him on the issue, although I think he sets the venue. But there's a lot of going on around city council usually, when you particularly have the Terrazas-Matthews majority there here in Santa Cruz. Anyway, he's decided that there will not be a meeting in the Civic Auditorium, but it will be available with a big screen TV for people to look at. And they can then walk across the street and stand in line if they want to speak. He also has decided he will not hold the meeting. Let me get this straight. Maybe I'm wrong about that. It is going to be held in the evenings of March 24th, Tuesday. I thought it had been moved to the afternoon. I was wrong about that. For anybody who got that misinformation from me, I apologize. however, he says in his letter, Don Lane writes, "If you would like to attend the meeting, please be aware that we expect a substantial citizen turnout. Many attendees will not fit into the City Council chambers. We have made arrangements for seating them at the Civic Auditorium across the street, a large video monitor. You can sign your sign-up cards and view it from the Civic and called over to council chambers as your turn to speak approaches. Encourages us to watch the presentations at the beginning of the meeting. You can watch it online or community TV. It will contain important information about the armored vehicle, potential uses, and its relationship to overall policing, both locally and in other cities, I guess. And what I'm going to be doing while you hear some interviews from the street is I'm going to be looking up the agenda, which usually is posted by this time. It isn't required to be posted until 72 hours before the meeting, which would be Friday at, I guess, 1 o'clock. But it's often posted Thursday night, so I'm going to see if I can find that and look up that item and give you some information about the Bearcat, which, as I mentioned to Carol Denny earlier, is not Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom's major priority. We certainly support SCRAM's positions on this in the sense that, yes, we want the Bearcat dumped. Yes, we want transparent processes at City Council. I personally am very skeptical of the methods being used, this sort of repetitive filling up oral communications with less and less people in the crowd, as I've noticed over the last 2 months, although better and better speeches, I have to acknowledge that. Really some strong, good speeches, those who are not bothering to spend their time reading the letter from Sam Farr, some of which is good, but one thing they didn't read from Representative Farr is the letter in which he authorized or actually supported the police department's attempt to get this vehicle and actually initiated that process with the federal agencies involved or through the San Francisco agency. Nor do we have a copy yet. Have I seen a copy yet of the letter from the Santa Cruz Police Department to Sam Farr requesting this and explaining why? Farr in that previous letter talked about terrorism targets at the boardwalk and things of this sort, which sounded absolutely ridiculous. And I don't think he's withdrawn that part of his letter. In the face of a lot of concern, he has said that there should have been more time for the city council to deliver it, and the police department seemed to be rushing it, maybe putting it in a position where the city council was felt forced to pass it. Huff's position, as I understand it, is we are supportive of, you know, ending, setting the bear cat back, and but we really are concerned, and this is something that I'm particularly concerned with, but Huff has also been concerned with over the last 6 months. They didn't want to make it a focal point of a discussion with Scram at the last council meeting, but this has been what Huff has been doing. We've been appearing on the corners at Laurel and Center Streets, which is where the police station is, and demanding the police station stop its homeless class profiling and also the racial profiling of some officers, such as Officer Bradley Barnett, who seems to have disappeared from Pacific Avenue, but who seemed to have a hard-on for African-Americans, or at least he ticketed seven times as many as were in the population for offenses like smoking while other whites walked by smoking, or employees came out of the Taco Bell smoking, and, you know, he just didn't deal with that. And I know police officers will often use these minor infractions to go after people that they want to question or that seem to them suspicious. And some of this is an unconscious bias. But whether it's unconscious or conscious, if it is impacting a group of people via race or class, it has to be stopped. I mean, I think a lot of this, these ordinances are simply tools for the police to stick their noses up people's you-know-what. And you might say it's a way to try to protect the community by looking for people with warrants and, you know, looking for that potential murderer who might stab another business person to death, you know, or, you know, shoot up with a needle and then throw it away because there are no convenient places to dispose of us because all the sharps containers have been either through funding cutbacks or through paranoia by groups like Take Back Santa Cruz been eliminated. Anyway, so we at Huff, and particularly me at Huff, have supported, I've pressed for more fundamental reforms in the police department, like stop the tasering, stop the overhand baton strikes, the stuff that the city council in Berkeley said they were going to do or required their police department to do a month ago or set it up as a policy statement. I'm not quite sure how powerful or how effective the police department's or the city council's up in Berkeley is going to control their local police, but at least they're trying. Here in Santa Cruz, not only is the city council not trying, but the activists, generally speaking, aren't. All their energy is on the Bearcat. The activists who are not entirely. There's some groups working. Sin Barras has a solitary confinement protest coming up. I believe it's Monday or maybe it's Tuesday, and I'll try to have more information on that on Sunday in my next show to dramatize this out at in the Lighthouse Field area. They're going to be doing a protest out there. There are a couple things coming up this weekend that Huff members may be at. One is a duck pond event in San Lorenzo Park, which Project Pollinate is putting on, which Pollinate is a group of, part of the SCRAM organization, Santa Cruz Resistance Against Militarism and Expulsion of groups like Huff, or actually Huff is the only group that's been expelled from their literature. I've got to say, a lot of these we're fine with a lot of these groups. Huff, and also we're fine with SCRAM. I'm fine with SCRAM as a group. Some Huff activists are not happy at all with them. They feel they were tarred, demonized, blacklisted without any kind of a hearing, without any kind of notice, without any kind of opportunity to respond or discuss or present their, you know, what are the charges? And we do nothing. You know, it's mainly, apparently, I'm told by those on the inside, most of whom will not give me a lot of details, that it's all about me and whatever my tactics are, or I've burned my bridges, or it's pretty vague. It's pretty vague. There's nothing specific, particularly nothing about the Bearcat that is, you know, I mean, I'm, anyway. So that's a subject I'm trying to avoid talking a lot about, because this kind of elitist stuff does go on, and it has to be, I think, opposed in terms of just the reputation of the people in the Huff organization, but also to make sure the agenda stays on target and goes in the right way and isn't smeared along with the group, because people in positions of who are sometimes for the best of reasons trying to vie for political power in order to get good things done are excluding people on the left because they think they're too boisterous, too raucous, too displeasing to the people in power, you know, that sort of thing. So there's this thing at the Duck Pond. I believe it goes from 11 to 4, and it's open to the public. And then there's another art benefit that's going on at M.H. Can, which people are invited to. That's up on Cayuga Street, right off of Soquel. And those are two events happening where there may be some Huff representation in case you want to learn more about Huff, or in case you're interested in volunteering to help with some Huff projects. There are activists that were also involved with M.H. Can and also concerned about outreach to the public via the Duck Pond, and also we're trying to get a lot of people who are getting these abusive sleep deprivation tickets for sleeping and camping or being in a park after dark and all that stuff to essentially file claims against the city so that the city and the rangers and the cops who are doing this stuff can be taken to small claims court and held accountable. Not that the judges are going to do diddly squat. In fact, today, three judges found that the laws, the law under which Gary Johnson, Ed Fry, and a raft of other activists were hung out to dry, jailed, held in jail for significant periods of time. Gary Johnson for, 4 to 6 months, Ed Fry for a couple of weeks, and then even in house arrest for 4 to 6 months. A lot of other activists who engaged in a peaceful protest or were simply looking for a safe place to sleep back in 2010 in front of the courthouse were charged with 647E, which is the state law that prohibits, quote, lodging, with lodging not defined. Well, a three-judge panel, which was reviewing Gary Johnson's conviction, for which he was for four different instances of sleeping in front of the courthouse the next year, after the 2010 peace camp, where he was doing this around the same time the Occupy was doing it, Occupy Santa Cruz, Occupy Wall Street, but as a separate action, he had a bench, he lay on a bench with a sign that referred to the right to sleep, and first he was arrested for trespass because the county had put up no trespassing signs after dark, essentially, on the courthouse area surrounding the courthouse. This is around the same time that the Occupy movement was destroyed. The Occupy Plaza, don't remember exactly what the proper word was for the structure that the Occupy folks had in front of the courthouse. And then the massive destruction of the homeless encampment in San Lorenzo Park. All this was happening around the same time as the city began putting up no trespassing signs. And this is significant, of course, because public buildings are places where people go to protest, whether it's day or night. And the protest can be, you know, loud and raucous, or it can be very quiet, having to do with a sign. It can be a fast. It can even be a sleep-in. And these are, or should be, legal activities before the buildings that lodge the people that are supposed to be listening to these issues, or at least to whom you come, rather than, you know, with M16s and bazookas, because you want to engage in a dialogue before you start engaging in violent activity, as happens in many different countries and has happened in this country in the past. So that's illegal now. And, of course, that's the first step. Well, that's just the first step. It certainly is a step towards an authoritarian, repressive government. A fascistic approach to this whole thing, where we use fascism in the loose sense rather than trying to talk about fascism economically and how it's a combination of corporate and government intermingling, which, of course, we also have. So maybe that also applies, usually involving strong nationalistic tendencies and some scapegoat group and the outlawing of left-wing parties, which sort of has happened in its own, not as a form of outlawry, but through changes in the California ballot system, you don't get third parties who have any real chance of going anywhere with this new primary system that only allows two candidates. Anyway, all these issues are issues that need to be addressed, and there's these different events are coming up where you can raise these issues. If you want to help Huff raise these issues, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. If you want to help sign up homeless people who are being abusively harassed by the police, even if the police are not trying to be hostile to them, imagine somebody coming into your house, waking up and telling you to move. You can't be here. You would probably find that rather traumatic, I would say. And let's hear now from some voices from the street. I've been doing a lot of interviews. I'm going to be playing some of the Berkeley stuff, the Berkeley interviews, the Berkeley protests, because we did a long protest. We talked from Telegraph. We walked from Telegraph and talked to, but we walked from Telegraph Avenue about a mile to the Berkeley City Hall with a little band in front of us and giving out literature as we went. And it was kind of a merry parade. And I did some interviews there, which I'll play, I think, on Sunday. And then, of course, there's the Berkeley City Council itself, which I'm hoping is online, because there they will probably have a good recording of that. My recording is apparently disappeared, which is really, really too bad. They don't try to confiscate your tape recorder at Berkeley, as they do here in Santa Cruz, or have repeatedly over the last year, if you leave it and walk back to look at the agenda in the spot where I usually leave it, which is near the podium. But let's hear some voices from the street.
I'm down here on the street. There's an interesting-looking stand here out in front of Forever 21 with a sign, traveling, broken, happy, any help is awesome, smile, thank you. And we have a woman with a sitting cross-legged in front of a series of displays, small displays. And next to her is this interesting-looking fellow in a blankie. What's your name, sir?
Jason.
Jason, what's your relationship to this stand? Are you part of the whole process?
No, I just kind of, I met her yesterday and just chilling, became friends on the street, and just have been hanging out since.
Are you a Santa Cruzan yourself?
No, this is actually my third day here. I'm traveling from Wisconsin.
What brought you to Santa Cruz? The lure of the social services here, perhaps?
Yeah, it's a cool city. I got recommended Santa Cruz when I was in Pismo Beach, so I just decided to head up here.
Because you heard it was the life of Riley, police were sweet to everyone, that sort of thing.
I don't know about that, but still.
Have you had any problems with the police so far?
No, I haven't had any problems so far.
Have you been sleeping illegally outside?
I actually sat somewhere, funny as it is, the only conversation I had with a police officer, he recommended me somewhere to sleep. He was like, it is illegal to sleep there, but no one really checks, so.
So we're not going to reveal your secret sleeping spot.
Definitely not.
And how many people were sleeping with you there?
Nobody.
You were a lone sleeper?
Yes.
That may not be your fate tonight if you pick up some company.
That's true. That's true. Who knows?
What's your impression of Santa Cruz so far?
Oh, it's a beautiful city. I love it. It's just marvelous. It's so much different than anything I've experienced from Wisconsin. People are really nice, and go in one direction, there's the ocean. Go in the other direction, there's the mountains. It's cool.
And we've been talking with your name again.
Jason.
Thank you, Jason. All right, jeweler woman, what's your name?
Bumblebee.
Bumblebee, I think I met you before. Or at least maybe I met another Bumblebee before.
Okay.
Tell me what you're up to with these fancy-looking, or actually these rather modest-looking, but nicely arrayed stones.
I collect gems. I also make jewelry out of hemp and different charms and stuff, and just like to sell and trade them so I don't have to ask for money all the time.
And how have you been treated by, for example, the three officers clustered in the corner on bicycles?
They don't scare me. I've been treated fine by the law enforcement so far. I've only been here a few days.
And how long have you been out on the street?
on and off for about 5 years.
And how long have you been out on this particular street with this particular display device?
A couple days.
Any hassles?
Nope.
And how long have you been here today with this device?
Just about 2 hours, I'd say.
No hassles?
None.
Any sales or donations?
Yeah, I actually traded a couple of things away, and I got some new pretty stuff and $25 so far.
So if one were to, you know, want to exchange green paper, I know it's very gauche, for your stuff here, what would the average cost of an item be?
I usually do, like, 5 to 10 from the earrings I make, 10 to 15 for a bracelet, and depending on the value of the individual gem, I just kind of ask people what it's worth to them so that they can decide.
And have you done this in other cities?
Yep.
And what's the last couple cities that you did this in?
Ocean Beach. That's pretty much it, actually. I'm out from the East Coast. I was doing stuff out there in Boston a little bit, too, and Portland, Maine. But out here, it's just been here in Ocean Beach.
How are you treated in those cities?
Pretty good. Some of the places you're supposed to have a permit, and the cops sometimes hassle you. But it's been, I haven't had a ticket or anything like that. Just been told to move a couple times.
And here, have you been told to move, or have you been told to stay?
I've just kind of been treated like a regular person for the most part.
No directions to move on or another spot or anything like that?
No.
Well, this is uncomfortably and inappropriately boring, so I'm going to have to thank you for this interview, and we've been talking with.
All right, sorry for boring you.
No problem, Bumblebee. Good luck with the work.
Thank you. Have a lovely day.
You too. Did you want to say who you are? We're talking with
Wayne.
And Wayne, you say that you're noticing the new developments, the In-N-Out Burger you say is going on, coming in down here, Betty's Burgers, which is doing okay. But Joe's, you have, should we say, less positive things to say about? Is that fair?
No, I love his food, but I just wonder why he's, he's just funny. He'll get it right. His dad was, I think what it is, his dad loved the homeless. And
really?
And he was upset by that. And maybe now he's starting to see a different side. I've noticed him being a little friendlier.
Initially he was adopting a somewhat discriminatory policy.
You know how it is. It's like you butt your head against these people, and then you realize nothing really happens, and you're like, well, that wasn't worth it, was it? So I feel that way about discrimination sometimes. Who are they kicking?
How many times have you seen him in the past?
How do you sort them all out, right?
Well, if they don't really like to have money, get going.
I know the average person in Santa Cruz kind of looks like a slum, in my opinion. There aren't that many business class people that he's waiting on. So he should just treat people equally.
Could set up a fashion standard, maybe a fashion police downtown.
Say one thing, he's got the best sandwiches in town, and he likes food.
I like Joe's. I have not patronized him since I heard he was giving a hassle.
I have a hard time not doing that, because when people have good food, I like to support it.
I mean,
I try to get past their issues, and maybe even affect them. I try to talk to them.
Maybe I should talk to him about it. I think that might be a fair thing for me.
Believe it or not, you can affect people.
Now, it's not Joe. What is that guy's name? John? Jake?
John,
Jim?
John or Jim, yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
He seems like he's really trying. I mean, it's like he's feeling the pinch like everybody, man. It's closing down early now. It sucks.
Yeah, that's happening more. And we've been talking with
Wayne. Yeah.
Anything else, Wayne?
I can't think of anything. I had something the other day, and I can't remember what it was. There's something that come up, but I'll think of it. Okay. I'll try to come down to one of your meetings.
Yeah, let me know if you do. And of course, he's got one of these 150 cards. Here's one for you.
Oh, I got one. I was just looking at it.
Thanks, man. And Joe's, which is the kind of pizzeria sandwich place, or kind of sort of across from New Leaf Market next to the Pacific Cookie Company, which actually Huff used to hold meetings in for a while. And I was a regular patron of, I learned that they drove away Curtis Relaford, who parked his Follow Your Heart vehicles outside and was having people dancing on the streets nearby. They called the cops on him, and so I haven't been in there, not as a patron since. But I have to say, I have not spoken with them about this situation, and I don't quite know what to tell them, because usually if somebody is turned away from a restaurant, and particularly if it's a homeless person, there seems to be a policy like that, I say, change the policy. And I'm going to have to keep working on that one.
You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Name of the show, Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. Here's some more from March 18th.
But I don't consent to an interview.
Certainly not. I would.
$362 ticket.
What?
Ouch. That's like every day of the year almost.
Did you pay it?
No, I'm going to court on Monday.
Good.
You want to show up to court with me?
Are you you're going for a trial?
Monday, 8:30.
That's arraignment. You got to get a trial date. Then you can go for a trial.
I'm going to the traffic court because it's just a traffic.
I know, but, but they'll give you a chance to plead guilty or those.
No, no, not guilty.
Okay, then you'll.
Discrimination.
They'll give you another date. When you call me, let me know.
Then the cops have to show up.
Yes.
And the cop says that the business owner who complained has to show up. Is that true?
Anybody who makes. Yes.
Whoever made
the. She ain't going to show up, bro.
He's right.
So then when she doesn't show up, they throw it out?
That's correct.
Oh, I pray to God.
Or it should be.
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph.
I know, right? That's expensive.
300, how much?
362.
Okay. Well.
But the price just went up. You want to buy one?
That's why I'm not vending.
I still owe you for the one that you're having me sample, remember?
Yeah, you like that.
Well, I you know, I don't
want. That's a $20 bill.
Yeah.
Well, no big deal for a big shot like you.
Hey, man. Well, let me bring it back. You know, well.
Touché.
Let me find something I like.
No, yeah, whatever. So,
and I'll bring it next time I'm down.
No sweat. I'm making a crystal grid. I'm not attached to my crystal grid being attached to my name. I know that when I'm long gone, my energy will be out there in the universe because my raps will be. You know what I mean? Well, no, they will. You know that.
No,
you know
I don't
that,
know
well, no, you know that 100 years from now, one of these raps will be a gift to a granddaughter. Or a great granddaughter. It'll be my work.
In a nuclear explosion.
Yeah. Okay, maybe not. Okay, here we go.
Well, I
that's
hope
taking
not.
It to the darkest level, though.
Yeah, I hope not.
Yeah, that's not we're going to do the crystal grid thing. Until that nuclear Armageddon. And at that point, nothing really will matter. Because at that point, it might as well be a supernova.
Yeah.
It's out of our hands, bro. We can only be with that which is here and now. That's the doubt. And the people want to get all Buddhist and live in a cave, but we're here and now. It's not a cave. You got to play well with others, or you go to the loony bin, or you get charged with a criminal offense and you become someone, you know. We don't like that, bro. We want to become free agents. And they say your freedom comes at a price.
Call me.
You have to
call me on the
operate.
Court.
Oh, you want me to call after?
No, after the arraignment. You won't get a court date until the arraignment.
Oh, okay. So you want to know when the court date.
Yeah, then I'll mention it at the health meeting and maybe I'll probably come here.
We'll be fine.
Assuming I'm not, otherwise.
Sure. You're a busy man, and I respect that.
Terrible.
It's good to work. It's good to stay busy and have things to do.
Nice looking blue stuff you got.
Oh, you like to see what?
I do.
I don't usually bring it out. I'm more of a pistol guy.
It's very pretty.
But today, the sea glass is called down to St. Agnes County, so I apply. I have quite the collection.
And that was sort of a by-the-by interview with Crystal Grid Guy, also self-identified in a prior interview as Kind Rainbow Brother. And he will be apparently going to an arraignment in the kangaroo court of Commissioner Kim Basket, or Basket Case, as I sometimes call her. And I do call it a kangaroo court, given the fact that I've seen how she operates. I'm still remembering how she operated in cases I was involved in with other activists, but and I haven't gotten a lot of. I've gotten some positive response in terms of how she's behaving, but I always recommend people disqualify her and go to a higher court, if only because they're more familiar in those courts with the procedures. For example, for if you're really going to challenge something, then challenge it. Don't go in, expecting to be able to get justice by simply having a just cause. That's just not how it works in these courts. You have to do things that involve, requiring the city or the police agencies to bring in documents. You have to prove your case essentially out of the mouths of the police or the complaining party. That's the best way to do it. And essentially, you have to work on the concept of reasonable doubt. You don't want to prove you're innocent. That's not the point, although that's what they require for the stay-away orders and the administrative process they created as a substitute kangaroo, even more kangaroo-ish, hoppity-hop court than the
the courtroom in the basement of Department 10 basement in the county building, courtroom basement. You have to prove that you that there's a reasonable doubt that you're guilty, because you have to be found guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And if you can show that, then there is pressure on the commissioner or the judge, if you take it into a municipal court, which you should, to find you not guilty. That doesn't mean it's going to happen, but there's more pressure to do that. And let's hear some more.
So I'm down here on Pacific Avenue. It is about 3 o'clock on the 18th of January. No, March. On a Wednesday, very nice sunny Wednesday, talked with the jeweler man who, very optimistic, extroverted fellow, who faces a 300 and, what is it, something dollar ticket for not moving every hour. He's going to go in for arraignment on Monday. I told him to give a call so we can let people know to come to his trial, which will be scheduled probably shortly thereafter. Hello.
How you doing?
Okay. How's it going? Any reports from the street? You take care. And that was a woman with a doggie and a display in front of Palomar. Well, I'm down on Pacific Avenue. It's about 15 to 5 on the March 18th, 2015, across from the closed Noah's Bagels. What a sad situation. Apparently they're closing up all over the country. I like Noah's Bagels. We're talking with
Kevin Robinson.
Kevin, you have a weathered-looking guitar. You're sitting on the statue of Tom Scribner, and you're playing the guitar. You've also got a couple of albums out here, Kevin Robinson Acoustic Light, and then an unnamed album, it looks like, Kevin Robinson.
This is called The Surface Gate.
The Surface Gig?
Surface Gate.
Surface Gate. And old-timer in Santa Cruz, recently arrived. What's your story?
I've been here. I was here 20 years ago, left and came back.
How's it looking now?
I liked it better before.
What did you see that you liked better? What did you see that you liked worse and so forth?
Less freedom, too many police, too many money, getting out of hand, all kinds of stuff. Yeah, just not as good as it used to be. More relaxed before, less relaxed now.
Any confrontations with la policia?
Well, I've been blessed in that department, so let's just hope it stays that way.
Now, if you want a hug, you got to let me know.
I want a hug.
Excuse me, I have to pause.
Sweet, lovable, like a
sensuous
thing. There you go.
All right, I keep missing your email, though. Let me turn off the machine so I don't.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
Hello. And the moon over me, shining brightly, oscillating. I'll play my way into your heart. Oh, I said, lady, when the world has even tear me apart. Tear me apart. Come on, guitar.
The name of that song is?
Just what came out.
All right. This is an original, not on these albums.
It's not on there. This is just what came out.
We heard it here first. This could be something that goes in the Smithsonian, you know.
I hope so.
How many years have you been singing?
30. Well, yeah, about 30. Yeah, I mean, 25 singing, 30 playing.
Can you make a living off this stuff?
You know, I'm alive and I'm doing it and I'm happy, so I'd say yeah. You know, that's what it equates to, yeah. I never really thought about it, but, you know, when I look at it...
Are you making a living wage off this stuff?
No.
That would be $15 an hour.
Yeah, no, not really, because that would be consistent, you know.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes less, sometimes more. Most of the time, more, though.
Any hassles in Santa Cruz recently by our friends in blue?
No, like I say, I've been blessed, and I hope it stays that way. Yeah. Yeah, they have it.
And here I am, listening to you, and we'll go out listening to you.
Take a look round the corner. Open all your eyes. Take a breath of fresh air. Let your mind realize you can make a new friend. You can walk on water, fly on the wind. Anything you want to, you can be a walking bird, a flying man, a woman too. Anything that you wanna do, anything you wanna do. Hey there, child of wonder. Did you think or did you smile today? Hey there, child of wonder. What you got to say? What you got to say?
To the music of
Kevin Robinson.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right. Will I be able to?
Here we have another merry band of musicians. we, of course, have recorded you before, but did we get your album before? I don't remember.
Oh, yeah, we got an album, yeah. Oh, yeah, we just finished it up. We're stoked, and we just got back from New Orleans. It was fun. Played a bunch of music.
And we're talking with, of course,
Chris, Eight Dice Cloth. Yeah.
And these other two individuals are white men, I should say, are...
Chris.
And I'm Kevin.
And I'm Robert. Yeah. Greetings. So, I'm going to play a little music here for a brief stint. And
Yiddish, yeah, let's do that.
Can melody?
Oh, we have clarinet, a long, big-looking saxophone-ish type thing. and a guitar.
Call me Sean.
my hair is curly just because my teeth are pearly. Just because I always smile, like to dress up in the latest style. Because I'm glad I'm living, take my troubles all with a smile. Just because my color's shady, it's different, baby. That's why they call me Shine.
And the name of that piece was?
Oh, that's Shine. That's a trad jazz tune from the 20s.
Thank you, sir.
I think the first people that did it and made it popular were, I think it was the Mississippi Sheiks.
So you are ripping off the Mississippi Sheiks?
Well, no, it's a, like a, it's a, yeah, it's a fucking, it's a standard, it's jazz standard. Django did it, Louis did it, you know, like a bunch of people did it.
And again, we've been talking with?
Eight Dice Claw.
As well as?
Kevin.
And?
Chris.
Thank you. Should be on free video. And coming up about 5 o'clock on Pacific Avenue, the saxophonic soundings of, I don't know, Austrian Peter. Right next to the Imagine Costume Changes Red Parking Meter, Emily Couture.
It's it's kind of hard to hear my voice over the strong sound of Saxy Peter's moving saxophone.
Peter is following.
Palomar, where he is standing.
Go away.
So I'm outside the El Palomar restaurant, or the Palomar Hotel. And we have one gentleman in shorts with long white hair shouting, go away. But he might have been shouting at Peter, the sex of... Oh, no, I like to lean here. You know how it is. I live in Santa Cruz, my boy. So to speak, although perhaps that means I spend a lot of time in Santa Cruz. And I'm outside a table posted in front of Marines, sort of in the blue zone, though I guess blue is both performance and tabling, with a guy who's selling... God knows what. Disaster relief kit. Will you survive spring break? It's a guy with a black outfit, a black cap, and a black backpack. Not sure what that's all about, but we'll come back later and maybe we'll learn. Meanwhile, on the sidewalk, a little guitar.
And that may be an appropriate place to stop. These, of course, are a series of random interviews and musical encounters on Pacific Avenue. You're tuned to the closing minutes of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. My show usually covers concerns about civil rights in this city and others, particularly for poor people. And it's kind of what we did today. Let's listen to a little more, and I will fade into the distance as Uncle Dennis is from the Cream to the Dregs arrives. Let's see if we can...
And coming up about 5 o'clock on Pacific Avenue, the saxophonic...
Why does he need it?
And we have one gentleman in shorts with a long...
And we've been through this, so I'm going to spin us ahead a little bit.
Disaster relief kit.
And we're almost where we should be. Sorry for the confusion.
Here's the Pacific Training Company. Of course, Saxy Peter standing nearby and blowing off. And there you have it. So here we are talking with
Phoenix Rose.
And Phoenix, again, let's describe what kind of artwork you do here.
Well, the artwork is, it's all digital photography transferred onto wood and then embellished with airbrush and sanding and different things of that nature. A lot of the photos I do are local people and performers, and yeah, I'm just usually here out working Pacific, trying to make a dollar and spreading good vibes.
Now, you said that you've been having some good experiences today, or at least not bad.